And we welcome you inside this Wednesday Sports Ethos Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comente here with you alongside, as always, the incomparable and all-knowing Jill Adge. And today we're going to go over some, basic cleanup work. We're going to talk about the Thunder game last night. Kings getting a win again. We're going to talk about their matchup against Dallas, the first of a back-to-back where they play Dallas again on New Year's Eve. But now they get to play Isaiah Thomas in an Isaiah Thomas revenge game tonight that I know some fans are excited to see IT back in Sacramento. And we are going to spend a good majority of this episode dissecting this whole, for some reason, polarizing Tyrese Haliburton, De'Aaron Fox debate that Kings fans, I think, pretty much on their own accord, have incited and started this, like,
you can only have one good player at a time, right, on your team.
Yes, exactly. This narrative that only one player is allowed to be good, and that's it. It shows just how, you know, we've been so neglected as fans with true, like, all-star level talent over these past 15 years, that when we have two guys that can seemingly be all-stars, we don't understand. Like, it's, we don't get what the fuck's happening. And we're like, we have to get rid of one of these guys. We can't have both of them. What do we do? You know? And so we're going to talk about that, about Haliburton and his excellence recently. And then not to forget about, of course, De'Aaron Fox. But let's backpedal. Let's talk about the Thunder game. It they came out with more juice, Jill. You know, they played like a team that had been yelled at by their coach and needed to have some sort of sense of urgency. This is not a good Thunder team. I dare you to name me five of those players on that team.
You know I can do that, but they're also missing a lot of people.
Yes,
so
you can. That's fair.
I mean, other people, yes.
The casual fans. Yeah, they're not going to know who Isaiah Roby is.
Their team is very much in take mode, and they've made it known they're in take mode.
And they didn't have their head coach.
They're getting their young guys minutes, and that's all they really care about right now.
Exactly. And the Kings went in 13-21 to that game. The Thunder just behind.
But you know why? You know why they can do it, and it's not really talked about? Because they've done this multiple times and been successful.
Yeah.
But they've also been able to trade a lot of stars to do these kinds of things. And they made the playoffs 2 years ago. So it's not like they have anyone on their team that's like, I've been in the league 5 years and not made the playoffs. So much easier to swallow than if you have guys sitting on your bench that have been in the league for 5 years and haven't sniffed anything. And then you're trying to sell them, hey, let's go suck a couple more years, and then maybe we'll get there if we do it all correctly, which we have not shown a track record of doing it correctly. So right. To me, it's a much easier sell for the Thunder and their players to accept that route.
Sam Presti has the track record. He's done it. He's shown it. And they've been a championship team. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I remember reading an article a while back, kind of like ranking the bottom tier teams in the NBA. And the guy, I don't remember who wrote it, but he made a good point that unlike other tanking teams this year, the Thunder have a bona fide star. They have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They have a guy that they know they're going to revolve this team around. Whereas these other teams are still trying to figure it out.
But what's funny nationally is people are still trying to get Shai out because he doesn't deserve to be on a tanking team.
Right.
Get him to get into a team that's closer. It's just funny how that narrative always changes depending on where the national people want to see a player play.
Yeah. And the small market teams, they never get the love, you know.
No. Even if you're doing something correctly or not,
right.
It's free that person and send them to one of the four big market teams.
Yes. Get them to LA or Boston or Washington.
We're here to draft and hopefully turn someone into something and then sell them off to a big market team.
Give them to somebody else. The Thunder, I feel, you know, going back to when they were almost dynastic team, they weren't. They never won a championship, but they made it to the finals and they had great teams. Crazy to always think that they had Harden.
They kept those
Westbrook
three together. You think that they.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they didn't trade James Harden. Which one did they trade James Harden for? Kevin Martin.
They had three good players, and it wasn't because they all three couldn't play together that they sent them off. It was they just didn't want to pay all the money to the three players back at that time. Now that's not as big of a deal for some of these teams. Right. But for a small market team, that was a big deal. And so again, what like you mentioned, the notion of you can't have multiple good players on your team. Yes, you would like them to be in spread out positions, but
Well, and I was going to just possible. say with the Thunder that it was even during those times that I feel like they weren't even respected enough. They were overlooked by LA or the Celtics or some other team that was also successful, but the bigger name. And it's, you know, no love for the little guy, I suppose. But
and then the big guy went off to Golden State.
Yes.
To the team that beat them, right?
Yeah. created the super team that everybody hated so much. But the Thunder have a bright future. I'm a firm believer that Presti knows obviously what he's doing. He's going to utilize these picks well. They own every draft pick from now till the end of time. And they have a lot of good young talent. Josh Giddey, we didn't get to watch last night, but he's a very fun player that I'm excited to watch in this league. He's only 19, I believe, Jill. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Still a teen.
He's young.
Came from Australia, kind of like LaMelo did. So got a good talent on the team. The Kings obviously should have won, and they did. I'm glad they did, and the score wasn't as close as it really was. You know, the final score 117-111, but it was, you know, it was more of a Kings were, you know, 10 plus ahead for most of the second half.
And then Kings got a foul called on him like the last, what? I feel like it was like the last 10 drives of the game that Shea or Dort were driving in, and it was just
whistle, whistle, whistle. Yeah. The game wouldn't end. It was typical. Kings have a win and the NBA gods are like, well, you know, pump the brakes. We're going to have to tease you for a little bit. But snap the 3-game losing streak. Now they play again against Dallas. And one thing I wanted to point out about the game that just popped out was for a team that's been pretty steady since Gentry took over and then with Christie in charge of shooting less threes and being more of a pace, get to the rim, get to the line team. Last night, they just took the cap off it. They had almost 40 three-point attempts, 39. And they made 17 of them, which is 44% from distance. That's good. That explains why they were able to score 117 and won the game. But I was just surprised to see all of a sudden, kind of out of nowhere, they went back to shooting like Walton era, if you will. I don't even know if I want to call it an era. The Walton years of three-point attempts with 39. Because the previous game, I'm going to do a little background check to make sure I'm not full of shit. They had 29 attempts. So that was still decent, but you know, you're firing them a little bit more, and Buddy Hield was making them and shooting them. So a different narrative in the game, but Tyrese Halliburton is so much fun, Jill. And we've said that a million times on this podcast. If I had a dollar for every time we've said that, I'd have maybe $30, you know, I could go get myself a nice dinner. But every time you watch a Kings game, you come away. That's your initial reaction is, wow, that dude's awesome. Like I love watching that guy play. But now to get to the big discussion of this episode, the Kings can have, I think on the same mindset here. The Kings can obviously have Tyrese Halliburton play great and then De'Aaron Fox also play well and them to stay together. It doesn't need to be an either or situation. That's a fallacy actually, an either or when you're talking about like choosing a side, you don't need to do that. It's false. And it applies here. You don't need to have one or the other. We can have both. The question that I think people are asking is, I guess, whose team is it really? I mean,
well, I think that's the thing though. To me, neither one of them have shown consistency long enough to say it's your team. Fox has shown it more, sure, because he's been in the league longer, but I'm not willing. I love Tyrese Halliburton, but I need more than a 6 to 10 game stretch to say, okay, now it's your team. No offense to him. I want to see prolonged aggressiveness. Like we've been asking for him to be aggressive all year. He's finally aggressive. I need to keep seeing it. This is a second year player. Again, I'm not trying to do to him what I've done to Fox and to Cousins and every other focal point of this team for the last 16 year drought. The thing is, it's to me, if you're going to get rid of one, it's because you're getting a lot more talent back. That's going to maybe even out some of the roster balance situation, you know, that we've shown, whether it's wings, power forward wings, you know, guys that can play 3-4, 2-3-4, et cetera. To me, it's not a matter of them not being able to play together. Like we've seen it multiple times where we even saw the comment last night that Fox went up to Halliburton before the game. Halliburton said this and tapped him and said, keep doing what you're doing. And the comments based on that were a freaking joke. a veteran telling a young guy to keep doing what they're doing doesn't need to be looked at through a magnifying glass. Like, we've been asking you to be aggressive all year. You've been doing that the last six games. Keep doing what you're doing. It's literally as simple as that. And Halliburton has said this. No, they keep telling me I need to do this. I need to do it. He's now showing it. Okay. They're telling him, keep showing it. I liked that. Like, yes, dude, I'm back. Keep doing what you're doing though.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to change. One guy took 17 shots last night. One took 14. One had 10 assists last night. One had 8. If balls are going in the basket, it's very much they can play together as a point guard, shooting guard. Now, whether you have to intermix the roles of those two, that's fine. But to me, if you're getting rid of, like people want to say, get rid of Fox, it's because you want to spread out the talent everywhere else. And he is your most prized asset right now. Right. I'm only doing it because of that. But if you're getting something back, you absolutely cannot miss, because otherwise you're throwing Halliburton into the dumpster like you did Fox for the last, you know, 4 years of his career. So again, we've had this conversation. You can move on from one, but you can't miss, because otherwise what's happening to Fox now is Halliburton's the next one up.
Yeah.
Like, it's a continuous thing at this place. You can have one focal point, great, but unless you have actual talent around them and talent that works together, you're in the same position over and over and over again.
Yeah. And the one guy that comes to my mind in thinking about, you know, who Fox could be shipped off in return for that would, I think, help the team legitimately balance it out and be what you need alongside Halliburton would be Jaylen Brown. And you're not going to get Jaylen Brown for De'Aaron Fox straight up. That would, the Celtics would never take.
No.
You would need to throw in, you know, Bagley. You couldn't really throw in Hield because now you have two huge contracts going for one. Math wouldn't work. You would need a draft pick. You would need to throw in more, which I'm not saying that the Kings should do that. I would do that. I would do, you know, Fox, Bagley, Terrence Davis, and a draft pick for Brown and a wing player from the Celtics. If the Celtics are trying to shift things up themselves, which they're kind of in a similar position where they're not meeting their expectations.
Right.
They know Jason Tatum is their guy without question. And they're thinking we might need to do something. It's Brad Stevens' first year as the GM. So he's probably, or president.
And Dennis Schroeder is not, you know, he's not one, there full right. time.
Yes. They don't have a long-term answer at point guard. That right. could be De'Aaron Fox. It actually make a ton of sense, I think, for the Celtics. And having De'Aaron Fox play with Jason Tatum, two guys that are picked right next to each other in that draft, that would be awesome. I would sign up to watch that type of Boston Celtics basketball. But from the Kings' perspective, getting Jaylen Brown to put at the two next to Halliburton. Now Halliburton becomes the point guard, ball's always in his hand. Brown plays off, is great defense, great attacker. That would be great. That would be something that could work and is a talent upgrade for the Kings. And also gets rid of a guy in Bagley who you're not even trying to keep anyway. So you kind of, you know, level it out a little bit. You still got Hield to figure out, but I would love that trade. But like you said, it needs to be something that helps them. De'Aaron Fox for Ben Simmons to put alongside Halliburton, I don't see how that is really a difference.
Your defense is improving.
Sure. And your size.
But I mean, you're still having the same shooting issue. Like,
yeah,
things that you had were clunky. Problems are still going to be problems. You have some more length. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I get it from the perspective of people just wanting to shake something up. I yeah. get it. But again, it has to hit. Like, whatever you do, it has to hit.
Yeah. And you got to be ambitious. You got to go. I mean,
guys are still young. However long they've been in the league or not, I refuse to believe a 23-year-old cannot improve in anything. Sorry.
Right.
Like,
I refuse to believe that a 23-year-old can't, with some time, gel with a 21-year-old player that also has a ton of talent. That's silly. And
especially if you can fix some of the issues around them, right, that you've been trying to do for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we think they've been trying, you know.
I mean, we've been saying these same people haven't worked for 2 years, so... Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like,
yeah, nothing new. I'm going to take us back a little bit here. I'm going to go down memory lane because the comparison we've been hearing from people that I think are just trying to stir the pot is that this Halliburton Fox situation, if you will, if you even want to call it a situation, can be linked to and drawn comparisons to the Monte Ellis, Steph Curry situation. And for people that don't remember, because it was 2013 when Monte was shipped off, the Warriors were Monte Ellis's team prior to Steph Curry's arrival. And even when Steph Curry was there for the first couple of years because he was injured and they were, you know,
kind of he was not anything. Yes.
Yeah. He wasn't Steph Curry yet.
He wasn't what Steph is now.
Yeah. It was Monta Ellis's team. He was awesome. He was a member of the We Believe 2017 that upset the Mavericks in the first round in what was some of the best basketball playing with Baron Davis, vintage Baron Davis. But Monta and Steph were not a combo that a lot of people thought fit. And Monta Ellis himself went on record as saying, I don't think we work together because we're two score first guards who are usually better off with the ball in our hands. He said it. Monta Ellis acknowledged it. Like, this is kind of a clunky fit. That doesn't mean that they didn't want to play together, that they didn't think they could do good things for the Warriors. And they were in 2013. It was Mark Jackson's last year. They were winning a lot of games. They ended up making the playoffs and winning 51 games. But they made the trade at the trade deadline. The Warriors did, sending Monta to the Milwaukee Bucks for Andrew Bogut, who at one point was a first overall
pick. Bogut and Steven Jackson. Like,
Bogut,
this
Jackson.
Is my thing. Is it's what made the Warriors the Warriors? Curry was great, but then they also hit on every draft pick.
Clay Thompson, yeah.
So again, it wasn't like they required all this talent back that then led,
yes,
to them drafting. Like,
it's not the same.
That's my thing. That's my thing. Yes, it opened the door for one thing, but had they drafted like the Kings drafted, I don't think they would be the Warriors that the Warriors are now.
No. And they had the framework there. The reason they made the trade, truly, and the GM, which at that time was not Bob Meyer, it was Larry Riley, I believe, and then Travis Schlenk. I don't know.
And everyone called the Bucks the winners. So, yeah, I mean, it just goes to show.
They were like, what are the Warriors doing? Why would you trade Monta Ellis, who's so good and has done so much for the franchise? But the Warriors wanted to give Klay Thompson his chance because he had been in the league for 2 years at that point, drafted 2011, 2013 is where we're at here. They needed him to step in. They thought that fit was more of the long-term solution. They knew Steph was the guy, and they needed a center. Sure. They really needed some defensive-minded center in the middle, and Bogut was the perfect match. The risk, of course, was that Bogut was always hurt, that you're giving up on Monta Ellis, and you're giving up on Ekpe Udoh, who was a previous top 10 pick of theirs, who was starting to like turn a corner. So a lot of people thought they were giving up and going like, not giving up, but they were overanalyzing this. You know, they were overthinking it when they could have just stuck with what they had because they had talent. As it turns out, the next year, Steve Kerr steps in. They win the championship. They beat the Cavs. Andrew Bogut is a huge part of that as a defensive stalwart in the middle.
Steph Curry becomes the best shooter in history.
And Steph Curry became Steph fucking Curry. And Klay Thompson became Klay
Thompson. Always said that, like, his shooting was there. It was people didn't think he would be athletic enough.
Right. Just a crazy, all the analysts that missed on Steph Curry projections, just so many wrong takes about that guy. But anyway, the trade itself, obviously, like you said, Jill, the Bucks were considered the winners and the Warriors were questioned. Looking back at it now, there's no question who won the trade. There's no question what this did for the Warriors in their title and dynasty run. But is it the same? Can we actually draw a comparison to this Halliburton Fox situation? You and I are both saying, fuck no. Obviously, no.
No.
These are not the same teams.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, asking Halliburton to be Steph Curry and Davion Mitchell to be Klay Thompson, that's a lot for, like, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you're asking these guys to be, you know, how many times? Three-time champions, like the best shooter of all time. Again, my thing is it's not sending Fox to make another person the focal point. It's sending Fox to get talent back. And it would have to be way better than what Monta Ellis, what the Warriors got back for Monta. But to me, that's where, if you're going to make a move, it's because he's your highest valued asset at this point. And if you can get something legit for him, great. But if that offer is not out there right now, I do not make that move. I don't. I still try and work around. I still work around the edges because I'm not sending my highest asset for nothing. To me, getting rid of the other ones for less value, to me, that's addition by subtracting. Getting rid of Fox for less value, to me, that's not an addition by subtraction, but that's just my take. maybe next year it'll be different because Halliburton will have another year, you know, under him, and you can see what Davion does for the rest of the year. But to me, it's just way too early unless you're getting like a 100, like a Jaylen Brown back, right? Like that's.
Yeah. I would love Jaylen Brown, but who wouldn't? You know, he's a top flight player.
I just think it's way too early to be saying, guys, yeah, can't yeah. or cannot. I mean,
seen,
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just. You haven't seen enough of it.
To me, give me talent. Mm-hmm. And then move the pieces as need be, but get the talent first.
The 2013 Warriors had talent. They were a winning team. They had Harrison Barnes, a young Harrison Barnes in his second year, I believe. They had Draymond Green, who was, I think, a rookie in 2013 or second year. I forget when Draymond was drafted. I always look back at that and think about how close the Kings were to having him because I know the Kings were coming on the clock in the second round, and I was expecting them. I don't know if there was any truth to them wanting him. I've heard different things, but he was right there, and then the Warriors jumped ahead and snagged him, and obviously he's a Warrior legend. But yeah, you're comparing apples to oranges. You're comparing one team that was already on the precipice of being a great, great team to a team that's seven games under 500 and barely beating a team of G League rookie no-name players because they're not good. So for now, let's just accept the fact that Tyrese Halliburton's a very good basketball player. And De'Aaron Fox is also a very good basketball player. And they can try and make this work. I like that Gentry staggers them more so they can each have their chance on the court.
And it's not like getting rid of Fox fixes their defensive issue when you have three other players that are right at the bottom of the league in defense along with him. Like, so you just keep, it's not working as is. We know that. And I think we both, again, have said this. We really don't care how you mix and match the puzzle pieces as long as it ends in a W. Like,
right.
I am not getting attached to players or saying, you know what I mean? Like, oh, these people are untouchable. No, like, do whatever you have to do to get a win. Like, when you're a prolonged bad team, do whatever you have to do to get a win. But it's clear that, at least for the most part, the puzzle pieces are not.
Yeah.
Don't work. But prior to Halliburton even coming in, the three didn't work together anyway. So it's not like just by adding him something, you know what I mean? Like that was
right.
New and all of a sudden those guys not working. Like, no, we had had years of it not getting those basics, right? As the coaches had been saying for years, like it's. Fundamentally that the team needs to fix itself.
Was Buddy a better fit alongside Fox when that was the thing, Fox and Hield? Yeah. Cause Hield doesn't need the ball in his hands. He's actually at his best when he doesn't have the ball.
When they played a certain way, but they went away. Like, right. I mean, it fit for 1 year.
Yes. 2018.
And he got paid.
Yep.
And it hasn't worked outside of that.
Yeah. Buddy Hield isn't.
I mean, the next year they had to move him to the bench and put in a bogey start halfway through the year. Like, it completely changed. Like, and you look at the shot charts from then to now, like, it's completely changed. And yes, he can spread the floor and gives the threat, but if you're not doing enough of every other little thing along with the rest of the team, like, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I definitely think that the biggest need of this team is still figuring out the four and what you're doing there. You have 17 centers and like two actual power forwards. One of them thinks he's Buddy Hield, but in power forward form in Tremezi Metu. And the other is Marvin Bagley, who has all the talent in the world, but hasn't put his puzzle together to be like a bona fide star that he could be. And I fear that he will be once he gets out of Sacramento and goes somewhere else, he will figure it out. But this team is so obviously imbalanced. They have so many guards, so many centers, no one in the wing, and it creates this clusterfuck that we currently have. To give Halliburton just some more love real quick, his last three games, his stat lines are just ridiculous. Alvin Gentry called him spectacular after last night's game, in which he had 24 points, 10 assists, 2 rebounds, 2 blocks, and a steal, 5 of 8 from distance against Memphis, a game that we would like to forget, including the other Memphis games because they're all terrible. 18 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. And then the Clippers game, 22 points, 13 assists, 3 rebounds, 3 steals. The guy fills up a stat sheet in everything. I mean, steals, blocks, assists. He even rebounds well. He's starting to get more I think aggressive on the glass. He is a raw talent. And if it wasn't for, what did he do again? Actually, now I'm drawing a blank. He didn't like talk with teams much in prior to the draft in 2020. Like, what was the reason he didn't go top 10? Because there was something that held him out of the top 10 in the draft.
They said they weren't comfortable with the shot.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Because I also know
they didn't believe his shot would transition.
Yeah. His clunky little shot that is automatic.
But it works.
But it works.
Like plenty of other players, right? That have funky stuff and it ends up.
Kevin Martin had a really weird shot and it never stopped him from making threes, making those corner threes.
And he's a smart enough player where he can do so many other little things that didn't really.
I mean, he's the fact that he's 21 is just crazy. It blows me away when I think about how well-rounded he is as a player, how savvy he is. Like, he's a 10-year vet and he's a 2000s baby. It's February 2000 is when Tyrese Halliburton was born. And he's already, debatably like the most complete player on this team. That's nuts. And it speaks to the Kings roster that they currently have. Harrison Barnes had a good game too. We haven't seen consistent Harrison Barnes this year. It's been something that's definitely hurt him in their attempts to find like sustainable success. Barnes has been way inconsistent all over the place, but he had 17 points.
And the biggest issue, like right now with this team, right, when we were talking about the things, is they have three guys making over $20 million right now, right? and they've the same three guys, right, that aren't working. And their salary cap total is $1,033,531. And so that's with active, right, roster plus some cap holds that they have. Now you look at a team like the Grizzlies, $100,000,015. They have a $15 million cap difference. They don't have one player making over 20. Granted, that will change when Ja can get paid, right? Mm-hmm. But again, it's proven guys, right, already that can win. Where we paid guys that had not proven anything, and you have a $15 million difference, and comparing a team that's made the playoffs or the play-ins, whatever, the last 2 years, and actually shows legitimate promise, and then you have the Kings that are just getting worse. Like it's a joke.
Yeah,
the cruel joke. You gotta drop some of that money. You do when you're a bad team. Like, you can't afford to pay a Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes over $20 million on a bad team. Like, you can have Fox making 28 and be a bad team. Okay. But, like, that's what sucks. Like, you can't keep paying all that money,
losses.
$60 million, above $60 million, almost 70 on a bad for three guys of your core that doesn't work.
Yep. Vlade so believed in this team. He was so all in on those three guys being the face of this team. It just blew up so spectacularly in our faces because he was wrong.
Maybe if no coronavirus existed, maybe it would have worked because they were playing well the end of the year. But what does this team do? They played well. They went away. They came back. They could not. They never played well together again. Like,
the bubble was tough. I know that at least Luke Walton was
drinking the end of it.
Plenty of good coffee. They did a whole story on like what Luke Walton brought with him to the bubble. I remember, and I was just like, why do I give a shit about this? Go win some games. But yeah,
you had a team that looked maybe like it was going like this that crash landed and never went back.
Has not found itself since.
But they were only like that because they had a hell of a run in the second half, and that was it. Like,
what could have been in
they
that?
Had a good, as this team does, they had good runs and then they had bad runs. Like, all that they've ever shown together.
Pelicans game on TNT against Alvin Gentry's Pelicans that were also suddenly red hot and fighting with the Kings for that eighth spot. That was the game that was supposed to be coming. We're supposed to play that game, and that was when the league shut down.
They crashed too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he lost his job.
Yep. It's funny how this, life is just full circle. Now Gentry's coaching us and trying to figure out how to fix the Kings, how to fix this mess. And it's impossible. It's not going to be something Gentry will be able to fix. Possibly not even the next coach will fix this mess.
And at this point, like we've been saying too, it's hard to know when any trades will be coming.
Yeah.
Coming back, because again, you can't complete trades if guys aren't active.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's, like you're not going to trade someone who's on the COVID.
Because
they can't, you might have a trade, but nothing's getting completed until the person gets out of protocols and can go get a physical and do all that stuff. So.
And the crazy thing is we don't know when, obviously this will, we hope the curve will flatten again going into January past New Year, you know, get out of the holidays and stuff like that. But we have no idea. That's just been the theme of life for the past few years. We have no idea what's going to happen. And so these trades that people are hoping for and we want, we're not going to see them realistically for at least another couple weeks. Like, I'm not expecting anything. I'm expecting, like I said last episode, it's going to get dangerously close to that February deadline. And that's when things are going to be able to clear up and moves can be made. And I say dangerously close because the Kings will be buried by that point in the standings.
They're running out of time, but time is not on their side either in the sense of what's going on. It's hard to know.
I meant to ask you yesterday, did you take anything from Monty McNair going to practice and like chatting it up and being like, it seemed like a little bit more hands-on in yesterday's practice?
No, because he's been there.
Like, he's always there, but they were making like a point like that he was there. And I didn't know if that was on purpose, if that was a surprise to some in the media that he was.
No, I think it was just, hey, everybody, he's here. Like, because as James had said, that they haven't been able to go to practices with all this going on. Mm. And so this was the first time they were like back and being able to be in there in a couple of weeks. So it was like, hey, everybody, like he's here along with everybody else. I think that's all it.
Okay.
I think that's all it was.
Because I know he's always there. Dumas is there. And Vivek's usually there.
But because
there.
Of everything going on, we don't know who's been allowed and who's not. And I just know from the talk the other day, it was that's the first time media had been let back in. And so I think it was just making a point of here's everybody who's here in the building. Mm-hmm. And especially knowing that you had outside personnel with COVID, like who were off, would they have announced it if Monty had? I don't know. Like,
true.
You know what I mean? So I think it was just a,
we knew some management had it. We don't know who.
Yeah.
Didn't tell us.
I think that's all it was. It was, hey guys, he's here and he's active. Like,
he's back.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's talking to
along with the rest of us.
Coach Mike, who had missed time as well.
He very well could just been checking in on his guys. Like, right.
Well,
you would hope guys that were just coming back from everything.
It's
so
not a weird thing to
hey,
do.
How you feeling? How you doing?
Yeah. Like, be a person. Yeah. Care about your,
but I did see someone say, oh, why are you in there? You should be on the phones. Like, okay.
Like
they all have cell phones. Okay.
Yeah,
like
just always on the phone. I'm not,
people have to call you back.
And I would
like you can be on a phone in there. I mean,
yeah. And no phones allowed in the gym.
I mean, like, really? Come on. Yeah.
I was
saying the guy shouldn't be playing video games when they're not playing a game. Like, come on.
That would crush De'Aaron Fox because he's a huge gamer.
Yeah.
I didn't ask you before, but I was wanting to hopefully maybe do a Jill's water cooler here in a second because we don't have a Friday show. I know you have your spreadsheet of them. So
So I'll be doing it a little bit differently this time.
Okay.
Because my voice is a little under the weather now. It's actually, I'll be playing a clip rather than telling the story.
Oh, okay. Well, let me wrap
up. I thought this was funny. So
let me wrap it up
going.
Just real quick. Before I hand it off to you, Joe, as we do it for the water cooler. Kings tonight against Dallas, 16-17 Dallas. They've gone through some shit themselves. They're up and down, up and down, up and down. And they play the weird back-to-back at home. Play tonight, then they play on New Year's. We're going to see Isaiah Thomas. There's a lot of people in protocol on the Dallas Mavericks. They've just lost some more today. Brandon Knight, who had they brought back into the league, had actually been playing well for him on this exemption, hardship, whatever the name of the contract is. He's now in protocols. I think Doncic is still in protocols. I don't actually know. You don't know what this, it changes in a heartbeat. So I don't know. But big thing is we will see Isaiah Thomas. We will see a team that's been scuffling themselves for two straight games to ring in 2022. And then I think they play, oh man, I just drew a blank on that first game of 2022 in January. I think they play the Lakers. And I'm just looking ahead as I like to do at the end of the episode. They play Miami. They play Miami at home and then they go back on the road to LA and then they play the Lakers. So anyway, they're going to have the same opponent in Sacramento for a couple of days, see if they can get a win streak going again. But for now, something that's actually awesome and that we enjoy, doesn't make me sad. Joe's water cooler. Are you playing it?
You're this one is actually about the Kings, and it's Kenny Smith giving a story. So,
okay. Nice.
They used to do these things. This was back in, I think, 2017. It was called Open Court, mm-hmm. and they yeah. had like guys sitting around the table together. Some people might have heard this. Some might have forgot about it, and so this will be a laugh again. But they were talking about guys that play on the worst teams ever, and so Kenny, you know, raises his hand because he was taken by the Kings, and it now goes into this. So let me know if you can hear this.
Yeah, kind of a little segment we're calling Humor Me. And if you cannot find the humor in playing on a bad team, I don't know how you survive it. And I think most of you have played on teams that were subpar. And Kenny's already got his hand raised. I think about the fact that, Kenny, you played on a team I'm trying to think of what your record was.
Not good.
But it was not good. Was it tough to play every night? Did you often take the floor knowing you were going to lose, that the Sacramento Kings were going to lose that night?
No, you have a delusion that you're going to win games.
But in fact, you were 24 and 58.
Yeah, you have a delusion. But, you know, Bill Russell at the time was our coach, and we had an interesting concept with me as a rookie. He said to me on the bus, he said, "You're going to have to sit next to me on the bus the whole time." And I was like, I didn't want to do that. I'm like, I don't want to sit next to the coach the bus and the plane rides and everywhere. I started walking to the back, and he grabs me back. He said, "Young fella, you got to sit next to me." I'm like, "Why do I have to sit?" Because he's a loser. And they're never going to win. So
in that story, he's pointing like a kind of like the Oprah, you get a car. He's pointing, you're a loser as they're on the plane. Like Bill Russell's pointing players out, literally calling them losers.
LaSalle Thompson wasn't one of the guys he pointed. He's like, "You can't call these guys losers. You know, what are you doing?" He's like, "I'm trying to trade him. Nobody wants him. Nobody wants him. If you don't believe me, you can come in the office and sit with me." So Bill Russell was a very keep it real coach.
Were those losses tough to take, Kenny? I mean, when you lose 58 games in a season, I'm imagining that from when you started playing organized basketball, you hadn't lost 58 games in your life.
No. I mean, it's difficult. And my agent used to say he could tell when the season started by looking at what I was spending, my spending habits, because in the season I would spend more money trying to please myself and make myself up. So I would spend money. I would buy things for myself.
Tell me, Jenny, how would
I would buy them cars.
Oh no.
I would buy all these kind of things just to make myself feel better. You spend more money because you know you're losing. But the last part about it is, in practice, Coach Russell really didn't run practice that much. So he would let Willis Reed run the practices. So he would read the paper. He was kind of like Bear Bryant. So he's sitting down, he's reading the paper, and all of a sudden I look over and you see him sleeping in practice. So he kind of stumbles and everyone laughs. He's like, "Everybody out of practice. If y'all wasn't so damn boring, I wouldn't be sleeping here." He was out of practice for us being boring, for him falling asleep.
1994.
Then they talked to Weber about Weber's experience on the Wizards, but I thought that was, but he's like, "I've been trying to trade all of them and nobody wants them."
That's the current state of the Kings.
And that's what I started laughing, because I was like, well, we're kind of there. Just
yeah.
At another point in time. Hey, but yeah, no, I want you sitting next to me. I don't want you sitting next to the losers.
The losers. They haven't ruined you yet. Come over here. That's what we gotta do with Tyrese Haliburton, you know. Put him next to Christie and don't let him ever see anybody that's, you know, only lost in their career.
Yeah. But, you know, that was the 87 Kings. And
yes,
now we're back to the 2001 Kings.
So. Russell was the coach. I, as a Kings fan, and that was before my time, I forget about that he was one of the greatest basketball players ever, coached his team. And he,
sorry,
no, you're fine. I someday will hopefully meet Gracie, Jill's adorable dog that she has. A golden doodle, right? Is that what she is? Not a, yeah. Is that the breed?
She's a petite golden doodle. And now she's decided she wants it's playtime. And
it's playtime. Yeah. She's been good for the past like 40 minutes that we've been doing this.
Yeah. She's like a little 15 pounder petite golden doodle.
You'll see her on Jill's Twitter page if you follow Jill. The Kings are such a cursed franchise that even the greats haven't been able to figure them out. I'm relieved to know that Gentry hasn't turned to that point yet. He's ripped these guys a new one, but from what we know, he didn't, you know, call them all losers and say that he's trying to trade all of them, which both of those are true. If we're being real, those would be true things for Alvin Gentry to say, especially the trading, like Buddy Hield. You know, there's no beating around the bush there. We are trying to trade Buddy Hield, but he's keeping it, you know, reasonable, of course, a modern NBA coach. And the team is trying to keep finding those good vibes. And Kenny Smith, thankfully, he went on to do great things. He's a great, great basketball mind. So the Kings didn't break Kenny Smith. Thank God. But thank you, Jill. That was good. And it was entertaining. Those roundtable discussions, or open court discussions, I do remember those. Great. Very good stuff. Ernie Johnson's the GOAT of NBA commentary, along with like Marv Albert. So we'll close there as we do with the water cooler. I'll be at a different one this time around. And we will not be here Friday. Jill and I will be enjoying our New Year's Eves and prepping for another year of covering the Kings together, hoping for better results in 2022, right? Like, it can't get worse. Oh, wait a minute.
Or you never know.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Never mind.
Hope for the best. Expect the worst.
Hope for the best. Expect the worst. And we'll be back on Monday. A couple games that we'll cover. I guess just the Dallas games we'll be able to discuss once we get back. Don't be crossing your fingers for any trades, guys. Again, it seems unrealistic right now. Bigger things happening in the world. Just instead, enjoy that Tyrese Halliburton is at least a bright spot on this team of losers. If Bill Russell were to look at this team, he would call them losers. All right, that's it for us on this Wednesday episode. Slater, dudes.